This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with bolt cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long, taking you to 6 o'clock tonight. I want to tell everybody at 6:30, LSU baseball as the Fighting Tigers play Mississippi State, and there'll be pregame at 6:30, first pitch at 7 p.m. Got a lot of things happening today, opening season of Major League Baseball, opening pitches today, and then certainly Sweet 16 cranking it off, as Charlie brought out, and we talked to Coach Boog yesterday, and he recruited a lot of those guys that are on that Maryland team, so I know where his heart was to pick Maryland. But Charlie, in the 4 o'clock hour, we have Saints offensive lineman Dylan Radance will join us at 4:20. And at 4:40, Steve Worthy, the CEO of 4 Kids Foundation, the Zurich Classic. And that's coming up in April, and we'll talk to him about just a unique tournament because it's a tag team. And Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry are going to come back to defend their Zurich Classic title. Charlie, Final Four and opening pitch with the major leagues, but so many eyes on that opening game, BYU-Alabama. And yesterday we have on Tavon Sadler, he really talked highly of BYU, two offensive-oriented teams, and he thought that the Cougars could pull off the big upset against Alabama.
And I'm not sure if it's going to be that big of an upset, Mike. Right now the spread is 4.5 points. BYU versus Bama. BYU had that awesome game against Wisconsin in the round of 32. Great. So, you know, you're expecting a ton of points. The over-under total points for this game, Mike, set at 175.5. And for reference, every other game is like 155.5, 147.5, 156.5, 175. So expect some fireworks in that opening game of the Sweet 16 tonight, BYU versus Bama. But yeah, Coach Boog back in the Crab 5 with Maryland, Mike. You know, if that happens, then I get to tear up my bracket because Florida's my champion, but we'll see.
Yeah, and Florida plays tonight as they play Maryland, and then Arizona and Duke. And we've talked about this before, and this is just my personal feeling. You got to help any team that's going to beat if it's Duke. I mean, they are the ultimate Noah's Ark team. They got two of everything at every position. They got it. And they would have to have a bad night of shooting, turn the ball over. I look at that game, and that's a little bit later on tonight. I think it's an 8:40 game as they play Arizona.
Yep.
And then Arkansas, Texas Tech, interesting style matchup between the two. Arkansas, certainly an offensive-oriented team under Coach Calipari, and then Texas Tech, known for their defensive play.
Yeah, so all, obviously, those top seeds, Mike, Bama, the 2 seeds favored over BYU, Florida, the 1 seed favored over Maryland, Duke and Arizona, I'm really looking forward to. Duke is heavy favorites against Arizona. Yep. As far as all 4 of the games tonight, they got the biggest spread, and you can see why. Duke is
What is the spread on Arkansas, Texas Tech?
5.5 for Texas Tech. So it's still, you know, they're expecting a pretty good game. That's Duke and Arizona is 9.5. So with Duke, though, you're right, Mike. I mean, they're just so talented from top to bottom. It's not just, you know, Cooper Flagg, who's going to be the number 1 overall pick in a couple months in the NBA draft, but also Konkanipal, who's been fantastic. He's going to be a lottery selection, kind of a wing player for the Duke team. But also Malawak, Kamen Malawak, their center, 7'2", great size, great shot blocking capabilities. Tyrese Proctor, they just have stars all across the floor. And there's a reason that they're a 1 seed and probably one of the favorites to win it all this year. I think they're actually technically the favorite to win
they're
it all.
Favorite.
They have like
favorite.
The lowest odds. But going up against Arizona tonight, we'll see if Caleb Love and the Wildcats can knock them off.
Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. I know we have a real tight first hour here. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy in the huddle with Mike and Charlie. Jimmy once, Jimmy twice. Okay, Jimmy might have dropped out there a little bit, Charlie. So we'll get him back on.
Oh, well, he dropped.
Okay, he dropped. Tell you what, let's go to break. And when we come back, we'll have on with us Saints offensive lineman Dylan Radance, North Dakota State guy, second-round pick of the Tennessee Titans, signed up with the Saints last week. And talk to him about big reasoning why he signed with the Saints. And have they positioned him at that left guard spot, which seemingly everybody is looking at? Maybe he'll fight Nick Saldiveri for that starting position. We'll be back with more sports talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTellier along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, the newest member of the New Orleans Saints, offensive lineman Dylan Radance. Dylan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Dylan, kind of tell everybody, what was the main look here with the Saints? You have an opportunity, certainly, to play quickly along the offensive line. This team has had some issues up front the last couple years. But what was the main draw to the Saints?
Out of all the teams that were interested, just the short visit I had with them, the coaching staff, and then, like you said, the opportunity to play, it just all made sense. And, it was an easy choice at the end of the day and just excited to get out there on the field.
Dylan, I think about this. Man, if I was to talk to the 16-year-old Dylan Radance and tell him, and let me tell you your story 10 years from now. You were lightly recruited. You played defensive line, offensive line in high school in Minnesota. Go to North Dakota State. You're part of 3 FCS national championship teams. End up going to the Senior Bowl, and I know Jim Nagy, he was the first one to tell me almost day one, man, Dylan Radance is really putting on a show here. And you get to be a second-round pick, and you've continued this career. Man, what a crazy journey, but I always love the journey in life for people because for you, it's not over. You still have so much left to go in your NFL career, but to get to here, if I was to tell you that as a 16-year-old, your reaction to that?
I probably wouldn't believe you. I had when I was going off to college, even my high school coaches were like, "You're going to play on Sunday someday," and I thought they were all crazy. I mean, I was a tall kid, so I always had the height, but I was about 245 my senior year of high school, just playing basketball and whatnot. So, I mean, I never had the weight to play offensive line until I got to college. So, yeah, just rolling with the punches, rolling with the journey, growing the way I did. Luckily, I had a lot of good father figures in my life. A lot of my coaches helped me develop into who I am today. And So, yeah, I'll give it up to them for developing me into the man that I am today and the player that I am today, because at 16 years old, I always watched NFL football growing up, and it would be a dream come true to play in it. But I never really thought it was possible until about halfway through college when my O-line coach, Connor Riley, who's now the O-line coach for the Dallas Cowboys, he kind of told me that I could play on Sundays if I wanted to. And, yeah, I kind of just took it from there. But, yeah, so at a young age, I always had a dream of doing it, never really thought I could, and then eventually it just came to fruition.
With the Titans, you kind of played every position, not kind of, you played every position other than center for the Tennessee. Mm-hmm. In talking to Coach Moore, offensive line coaches with the Saints, have they set a certain position? Because I think a lot of people like myself feel, I know you played strictly at right guard last year for the Titans, that maybe that with this team, you're going to be on the left side.
Yeah, I guess that's the opportunity that's open right now. Obviously, there's nothing set in stone, but left guard would be the opportunity that's there. We'll see how this whole offseason goes, going to put in work. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm trying to play football. I'm trying to get out on that field. So wherever they see me fit to play on the O-line, that's where it'll be. And like you said, kind of right now, it's going to be that left side.
Kind of building a little bit off of that question from Mike Dillon, just looking at our St. Sideline reporter Jeff Nowak has the stat, the snaps by position throughout your career. Jumbo tight end, you have 13, left tackle, 162, left guard, 322, right guard, as Mike had mentioned, you played all last season in Tennessee, 1,080 snaps at right guard, and then right tackle, 504. Just like the versatility of playing around the offensive line, you know, you can bring that to this offensive line for the Saints.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely my playing days in Tennessee made me a lot of versatility there. But yeah, I think it made me learn a lot about myself, not only at my physical body, like as a player, just being able to figure yourself out, because in college I only played left tackle. So being able to just figure my body out physically and mature more into that. And then, just mentally being able to take any challenge that gets thrown at you throughout the week or throughout the day, just being able to switch sides, switch positions. I think it just mentally prepares you for a lot.
And Dillon, you mentioned you played left tackle. You played offensive tackle at North Dakota State. We talked with Landon Young last week, who just re-upped with the Saints as well, a backup offensive lineman that started out as tackle, and he played his collegiate career tackle, but he's played some guard at the NFL level as well. And he mentioned how it was easier to play guard once you played tackle. Is it kind of the same process for you? Was it easier to play guard once you played tackle and back and forth?
Yeah, they definitely both come with different challenges. Guard, you got to keep your head on a swivel because guys come from both sides. That tackle, you kind of look outside in, so you kind of know that. But obviously, there's a reason they pay those edge rushers in the league $20 million plus a year. So those guys can be dudes. And not to say that there's not dudes on the inside as well, but at guard, at least sometimes you're kind of in the middle of the slide side. So you get a little bit of relief throughout the game. So I think both come with challenges. But, yeah, ultimately, at the end of the day, being a longer guy, I'd say – the shorter inside as a being a guard, being able to make contact quicker definitely helps a little bit.
Dillon, everybody works with different people in the off season. So, what's your workout routine in the off season? Do you work with somebody that's offensive lineman, or former offensive lineman, or a coach?
Yeah, right now I'm down in Dallas, Texas, working with Duke Mannyweather.
Oh, okay, with Duke
guys.
I got you.
Yes. Yep. Correct. So. This will be my first offseason doing that, and I've loved it so far. And, yeah, just being able to be around other pro guys that work with Duke, it's huge to be in that community working around these guys, especially guys who are very successful at it. So, yeah, it's been good so far.
One thing I can tell you about Duke, man, he stresses fundamentals. That's something he really gets on guys that he works with about. Is winning on the fundamental part of the game, and I'm sure you're hearing that already from him.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah, every single drill. I mean, we got him and another coach. He splits us up into three groups, so we get more one-on-one coaching. And, yeah, it's been good so far, like I said, and it's been awesome learning from him.
Your first impressions of Kellen Moore, because that's special for him. This is first time being a head coach in the National Football League. And so your thoughts on first impressions of Coach Moore?
Yeah, I shook his hand, met him very briefly. I'm excited to meet more of him and get to know him more. But, I mean, just knowing that a guy who just came off Super Bowl win, being able to bring that energy into the building as a new coach, I'm sure is going to be great. And like I said, just excited with the initial handshake that I had with him, and excited to grow the relationship from there.
Dylan, this ain't dancing for pro football, so you get injuries. Anything this offseason that you had to get cleaned up, or are you healthy this offseason?
I'm pretty healthy this offseason. I mean, like you said, you get nicks and bruises throughout the season. Like I said, I missed one game last year from a toe injury and then one game from a shoulder injury, but came into the offseason, luckily, with a clean bill of health, was able to finish the season out starting and playing. So, nothing to worry about here.
Dylan, Brendan Nugent is back as the Saints offensive line coach, and I just wanted to ask you if you had any interactions with him yet and what he's told you about his envisionment for you on the offensive line.
On the visit, got to meet with him, the assistant line coaches, just talked a little bit of his history, and obviously he's been with the Saints before for a while, and just talked a little bit scheme, what he expected out of the run game, what he expected out of the pass game, technique, all that stuff, mentality. So, that was a good meeting. And, yeah, like I said, looking forward to learning more about the offense that they're going to put together and what they're going to expect out of the offensive lineman and getting to know him more. It was a good initial meeting and excited for more.
Dylan, you got to go up against him up close and personal and see it in practice too. I think one of the best players defensively in pro football in Jeffrey Simmons, from a guy looking across, and you see that guy in practice and, you know, his work ethic, but you've watched him. That guy, that's the way you play defensive line, because he's a big man that can run. He's fundamentally sound, but, man, he's real physical, but he sort of shocks people with his athletic skills.
Yeah. Jeff was one of our leaders in Tennessee, if not the leader, a few of those years. And, I mean, yeah, with his work ethic and leadership, he's one of those guys you just you're happy to have him on your team, because when he puts those pads on, he's definitely one of those mean defensive linemen, and he's strong, and like you said, he's quick, and he's definitely a disruptor. So every fall camp when we have to go against him for a few weeks straight, we're just happy to see a new opponent, new faces when the regular season starts, because it's not fun going against him every day. But, yeah, he's a good player, a lot of respect for him, and he was good for us in Tennessee.
For a young offensive lineman, let's say a teenage guy that's trying to play offensive line, any advice you would give him? Because this is a game of footwork and leverage and hand placement and everything else. So what advice would you give a young offensive lineman in those growing stages?
In those growing stages, I mean, I'd say just learn a lot about your body physically, as far as your core, your balance. Being able to obviously handle bull rushes in the NFL is huge, because everybody's so strong. So, I'd say just figure out your body, figure out your weight, grow into that, whatever that looks like for that player. And then, core and balance are huge. And then obviously you can always get stronger being a young guy growing up, unless you're just squatting 500 out of high school or something. But just being able to get that strength up, get that core strength up, and that balance, because you got to be able to handle a lot of different things that they throw your way when you get to the NFL.
You know, Dylan, Mike brought it up with Jeff Simmons, but I also wanted to get your thoughts on T'Vondre Sweat. Mike and I had broken him down, broke down all his tape entering the 2024 draft. Man, a wide load, a big dude, very physical, but also such an incredible athlete for how big he is. Just, you know, going up against him in practice, I know you saw it like up close and personal.
Dylan, I don't want him eating New Orleans food. Man, I know he don't like to get on scales. I know that for a fact.
For sure. Yeah. T-Sweat, he was not only a great teammate, fun guy to be around in the locker room, but, yeah, you got to get your hands on him quick, because you let him get a full head of steam, it's going to be hard to slow him down, that's for sure. So, great athlete, great guy. Definitely an exciting future for him.
Had you ever been to the city before? To New Orleans?
Only to play preseason game Titans played, and then I didn't play in the other game. That was the year I tore my ACL, so I was a healthy scratch on the sideline for that. But, yes, the only time I've been here is to play football, and it was in the Caesar Dome, which was an electric atmosphere to play a football game in.
There's no question about it, and I would tell T-Sweat this, and I'll tell you. You don't have a difficult time with weight. Man, the food here is going to be hard to walk away from. I'm going to be honest with you. Hard to push that plate.
That's what I keep hearing. Yeah.
Dylan, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Wishing you the best of luck with the Saints. Stay healthy. And, man, to be in that dome and to hear that chant, man, it is really something special.
100%. Yeah, I can't wait. I'm excited. It was a pleasure being on. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. Dylan Radins, Saints offensive lineman. Looks as though, Charlie, he'll be playing left guard. And his competition there will be Nick Saldivari. I know people in this organization that want him to be the starter, Saldivari. But he got to stay healthy.
You got to earn it too, Mike.
He was a guy came in with a lot. He was a small college guy, similar to Dylan.
Old Dominion.
From Old Dominion. He was a tackle that they kicked inside. So there's some similarities here. Mm-hmm. Now, Dylan's he's been more healthier than what Saldivari's been. When we come back, we'll have on with us the CEO of 4Kids Foundation, Zurich Classic, Steve Worthy, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Like to tell you along with Charlie Long in studio and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talk and text line, the CEO of 4Kids Foundation, Zurich Classic Tournament Director, Steve Worthy. Steve, thanks so much for joining me this afternoon.
Absolutely, Mike. Always fun to do this.
Steve, man, I hear it not only locally, but, you know, when you do shows away from Louisiana, people always bring up about the Zurich Classic and just the uniqueness of it because, it's, you know, golf's the ultimate, you know, it's not a team game, so to speak. You fighting yourself on that part, and along with other competitors. But this is the tag team championship here. And so it's great that it's a unique format, and this year you have Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry coming back to defend the Zurich Classic title. But how did that originate? Who was behind that thinking of kind of tag team in this? And it makes it certainly unique for people because I always get asked about it.
Yeah, it's been so much fun, and it's been such a great change. This will be the eighth year of us playing at the two-man team format. You know, back in the teens, 2017 was the first year we went with the team format. You know, when we were in the individual days, we weren't attracting the fields that we wanted to attract, the players that we wanted. You know, you talk to the PGA Tour and the players, everybody who came said, you're doing everything right. It's, you should be having more success. And we need to do something to make it better. And, you know, people, we brainstormed around and talked about a lot of different things and ended up settling on the change to a two-man team. They used to have a two-man team event back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, and it had been, 25, 30 years since that had happened. And so, you know, we jumped at the chance to do something a little different. I mean, we're a unique city. We're a fun city, so playing in a two-man team format is a lot more fun. That fits. Guys want to come to town and have a good time. And, you know, I mean, with the kind of mimicking the formats from the Ryder Cup and President's Cup, that's been a lot of fun as well. And, you know, the combination of all that has gotten us good feels. We've gotten a lot of great champions, and we've really started to attract a big crowd, and that's been a lot of fun.
Tell us the challenges of this, because this is also about getting other people involved in sponsorship, and that's a big part of, hey, you got to get funding. And so you're in heavy competition because everybody's looking to get sponsors for their particular deal, and that is challenging for all the golf tournaments around.
It is. And, you know, there's been a lot of upheaval in the golf world with not knowing, you know, a competing league and are they going to merge and where that's all going to go. But, you know, for us, we've had to make sure that we are appealing to not just the hardcore golfer, but people who just want to come out and have a good time, festival goers. Yeah. You know, we put so much emphasis on our food and beverage operation, which people love. We have bands on the weekends. You know, Rory got up and sang last year after he won, and that, that certainly went viral. I said that at media day yesterday. He hadn't yet dropped the mic, and I had six or eight texts already from people who had seen it online about how did you make that happen. So, you know, we have to appeal to everyone else. And, you know, from our standpoint, and I've said this many times, as a hardcore football fan, you know, I could have somebody that I do business with sitting next to me at an LSU or Saints game, and we're not going to talk about business. I'm focused on that game. But, you know, we have such business-to-business opportunity. People sitting in those suites can watch the best players in the world go by all the while talking about their business and how do we do more and how do we do better. And so, you know, we've really, our hospitality suites have grown and grown to the point that we're going to have to go out on the golf course and other places because we've pretty much maxed out what we can build at 17 and 18. But people want to get together, people that they know, other influential businesses, and spend time together. So, you know, like you said, it's always a fight, but I said that at Media Day yesterday. You know, we, coming out of COVID, we had not been opposite Jazz Fest for 3 years in a row. We were opposite Jazz Fest last year. Saturday and Sunday, they had big crowds. Saturday and Sunday, we had record crowds. Everybody wins. Everybody comes out. You know, we're an event town, and people enjoy it, and we've been blessed to have a lot of sponsors who like the product and continue to participate.
And Steve, kind of lightning strike. I don't want to get hit, but for the most part, good weather. You know, that because that plays a part, because sometimes this time of year, man, you don't know what kind of damn weather you're going to get out there. But for the most part, Zurich Classic, you've been spared of a lot of the bad weather.
We've been on a really nice run, and I'm knocking on wood right now.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know, from 2013 to 2018, we had a really ugly run. We were in that unfortunate part where we just couldn't catch a break. And now we've had 4 years in a row where it's been beautiful. And, you know, I mean, again, like we said, I mean, that attracts people who might not be the hardest core golf fan within, on a beautiful day, want to come out and let's see what it's all about. And we've converted a lot of those people to regulars. And let's, you know, we've got some foundation members and influential people who are saying a lot of prayers. So I'm hoping we can continue that good streak of weather.
Yeah, because, you know, that's one thing we know about this town, man, they love the food, love to have a good time. And so they're in the right spot. You know, we've talked about Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry coming back, but some of the other names that have decided to team up and that you can release at this point that is playing in the Zurich Classic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we announced Colin Morikawa yesterday, who's the number four player in the world. Sure, you know, Rory's number two, and Shane is number 12 in the entire world. Colin's number four, and he's playing with Kurt Kitayama. You know, a very good team. We are a little later with our media day this year than normal. So, you know, we are starting. We'll have another team that goes out tomorrow, and we'll start putting out 3 to 5 or more teams every week and just roll that momentum all the way up to tournament week. So you're about to see an avalanche of good names. You know, we've got a lot of good guys lined up. We've got a lot more that we're in conversation with that I feel confident are going to come in before we get to April 21st. And, you know, when it's all said and done, I think we're going to have another really, really, really good field, but, you know, in April.
Steve, tell everybody, if somebody's interested, because this is also about charity work with the Four Kids Foundation, and if somebody wants to get involved, but this is also heavily involved in charitable work in our region.
That's, you know, I mean, the Four Kids Foundation, our host organization that runs the golf tournament, it's our members who are out working in those hospitality suites and on the range and doing scoring and all of the different things that have to take place out there. I mean, they devote tremendous time and effort to make this, you know, we can make the best plan in the world, but we don't have the members and the volunteers who are out executing it and taking ownership and doing all of what they do. It wouldn't work. And so they do that because we're able to raise money in the community for children's charities. I mean, certainly we've got a lot of need in New Orleans. And, you know, I mean, we raised $3.3 million, distributed $3.3 million for children's charities last year. So our members work really hard, but also take great pride in knowing that they're making our area and our region a better place to live. We distribute that money, you know, from Baton Rouge all the way down the bayou through New Orleans. and are very proud of the work our folks do.
Steve, if somebody wants to get in touch with you, what's the best way to do it to help out with the Four Kids Foundation?
Yeah, I mean, probably the best thing to do is go to the our website, ZurichGolfClassic.com. You can see all of the ticket options. There's info. If they need to call us, if they want to volunteer, they can do that. If they want to join the Four Kids Foundation, there's info there. A lot of opportunities, but all of that info is on the website. So ZurichGolfClassic.com would probably be the best start.
Steve, thanks so much for joining us. I know we'll have you back on before the tournament, which is later on in April. And I know I'll probably be busy that weekend because I think it's the NFL draft weekend.
Draft.
But that's all right. But, hey, we'll always keep that eye on things. And it ends Saturday, so I got a Sunday to go.
Perfect. Well, we appreciate it and look forward to talking to you as we get closer.
Thank you so much, Steve. Appreciate it. Steve Worthy, CEO of Four Kids Foundation, Zurich. Classic tournament director, and Charlie's, they've been lucky, jackpot lucky. They had a string where, man, the weather was not real good, but the last 5-6 years, they've been fortunate with it.
It's like he was saying, he's going to be knocking on wood to make sure it stays that
way. Man, knock on anything, because you never know this time of year what kind of weather you're going to get. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870 right after this break. Finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. Charlie, got any updates from Major League Baseball? I know you're watching
best.
The Astros.
Yeah, no, my Astros are doing well. I'll do my best to do a quick scoreboard here, Mike. Yankees 4, Brewers 1, Orioles 9, Blue Jays 2. Phillies 2, Nationals 1, Red Sox and Rangers tied at 2 apiece, Pirates 4, Marlins 1, Giants 2, Reds 3, White Sox 3, Angels nothing, Guardians 4, Royals 3, Astros 3, Mets nothing, Braves 4, Padres 3, and the Twins and Cardinals tied 0-0 in the bottom of the first.
So the Astros are beating that Sports Illustrated cover team, right?
Yeah, they're doing pretty good.
We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL. Welcome back to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike DeTillo along with Charlie Long. Want to tell everybody at 5:20, Ugo Amade joins us. I would say a new Saint, but he's been on the team before. So Ugo joins us to talk about his return to the Saints, returning for a third year in the black and gold. And at 5:40, one of our, man, best guests we got, Scott Spinelli, does a great job. Former college basketball coach, now analyzes the college and pro scene. He break down the Sweet 16 tournament. And want to tell everybody at 6:30, it'll be a pregame, 7 o'clock first pitch, as LSU plays Mississippi State. Charlie, before we go to Jimmy, let me answer this text. And I've had it before, and texter 6731 says, Mike, amid the troubles with the law, do you see Karen Lacy falling in the draft? I saw where somebody rated him as a third-round pick. If Lacy is available in the later rounds, do you take a chance on him? I can tell you, a few people have talked to me about Karen. He grew up in Thibodaux, right up the road from me. I saw him in high school. He was a really good basketball player. Then he figured out they got a lot of 6'2" basketball players, so he decided to really concentrate on playing wide receiver. Because of the allegations, and they are serious, and he'll have his day in court, some teams have taken him off their board completely. So it'll just be, I think he'll get an opportunity. Now, first of all, everything's got to be cleared court-wise and however it's looked at in the court of law, but some serious allegations on Kyren, and again, he will have his day in court to talk about it, but I would think at best he would be a late-round pick, at best. But
yep.
I got a feeling he may go completely undrafted. We saw what Lael Collins, what happened with him. This is the guy projected as a first-round pick. He didn't get picked at all. He was a free agent. And so with Karen Lacy, man, just terrible situation, but especially for the gentleman that got killed in that wreck. I think at best it would be a late round pick. But to be honest with you, I think because of situations still being handled court wise, he'll probably go undrafted. And he would have been a third round pick. He's a big receiver, can catch the football. he's got a lot of football. I guess the term arrogance is there because he thinks he can catch anything over anybody. And that's great to have. He plays with a lot of confidence out on the field, has bettered his eye-hand coordination to catch the ball. I think at times he was trying to run with the ball before he caught it, and he would have some easy drops. And then Bobby would always text me, "Man, your boy dropped the ball."
Nah.
Okay, I got nothing to do with that. But he got better at it, and also as a route runner, he would have been a third-round pick, but I think because of things off the field, he'll probably end up being undrafted. Let's go to our Oakwood Hard Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Jimmy and Gretna. Jimmy, I hope you're there now. You're in the huddle with me and Charlie.
Hey, yeah, man. Hey, look, let me say this. Talent, you bring up some good points there. Look at Trey Lance. He's now going from the third overall pick. Now he's playing in the Canadian Football League. I kind of feel like he didn't really get a chance, but I guess the scouts and the coaching saw what they saw, and it was a overvalued guy at three overall. Never thought I'd say Nick Mullins would have a longer career than Trey Lance, but here we are. Let me switch over. Obviously, great baseball game tonight, LSU, Mississippi State. Switching over to basketball, the Pelicans host Steph Curry tomorrow night. He's coming back from injury. You know, Mike, Charlie, we've won enough games to where we're probably not going to get the number one pick. I mean, I would be fine with us losing out. Obviously, I like the development of Carlo Mackovich and Misi. Carlo had 19 points the other night, so this has given us a chance to see some younger talent with Zion being out so much and the other starters, Herb, Trey Murphy, out for the rest of the season. My question to you guys is this. With so few Cinderellas in the tournament, we know Cooper Flagg, if he comes out, which it sounds like Charlie was saying he is, he's like the lock.
I'd be shocked if he came back. Coming out. I don't care what kind of NIL
Jimmy,
deal.
The whole thing with Cooper Flagg, like, look, I get, the people saying that he loves it at Duke. Yeah, I'll believe it when I see it.
That ain't going to happen, boys.
Number
I hate
one
to break
overall
it to you.
Pick money is different.
Well, my question to you guys is this. Let's say we're the fifth, sixth, or seventh pick, somewhere in that vicinity.
God.
Are there any guys we should look for in the tournament tonight, the big dance this weekend and starting tonight, that you see as a possibility around that spot in the draft that we can kind of see what they look like?
I know Charlie's got one.
Charlie?
Derek Queen from Maryland. We talked with Coach Boog about him yesterday. He said that he's probably going to end up being a top five pick in the draft. One of the most recent mocks I saw, Mike. So the best way I could describe this draft to folks is that the number one overall pick with Cooper Flagg, there's a gap after that. And then the number two overall pick is likely going to be Dylan Harper from Rutgers, the guard. Then I think there's another gap after him, and then there's two wings on the board. Ace Bailey, who's a wing from Rutgers, and then VJ Edgecombe, who's a wing from Baylor. So those are your top four prospects. They're basically locked in stone. After that, it kind of gets up in the air. The most recent mock I saw, and I really liked it, had Derek Queen going at 5 to the Brooklyn Nets. And obviously, we won't know the official order until the draft lottery happens.
And the Nets have 4 first-round picks?
The Nets have 4 first-round picks.
Good Lord.
Yeah, no. So that was the whole thing with this mock draft that I had seen, was that they draft Derek Queen as their 5th overall selection, and then they kind of built around him, so to speak, with some of their other draft picks. Like, they took Alabama's Mark Sears, who will be a later first-round draft pick, so I'm not going to mention him. Derek Queen from Maryland is one of them. Con Knipl, who's kind of a wing forward for Duke as well, is another one that's going to be probably a top 10 pick. Let's see who else that's still playing right now. Because I would say Trey Johnson, but he's out.
Yeah.
The wing from Texas.
I saw a mock draft that had him going in the 6th spot, Trey Johnson. So that would be in the area, Jimmy, that we're looking at of when the Pelicans, they'll probably get slotted to pick in that particular slot. And doesn't OKC, somebody has a protected pick that they have?
So it's Philadelphia. Philadelphia is openly tanking. Like, trying to charge to the finish line, pick up as many losses as possible. Right now, Mike, they're in the 5 spot. If their pick falls out of the top 6, it goes to OKC. So they're doing all they can to land in the top 6 and make sure that they keep that pick. So that's something to keep an eye on. With the Pelicans right now, they're 20-53 overall. They're at the 4th spot in this lottery system. They're behind Utah, Washington, who they're not going to catch. Charlotte's the only team that they could potentially catch for the 3rd best odds. But even then, it's a little bit of a stretch. It almost feels like the Pels are kind of locked into that 4 spot, which, if you're talking about where they could end up, you have a 48.1% chance to land in the top four, which isn't as good as it would be if you were in the top three pick, like the top three worst records, but you're at the fourth spot right now. You're probably not going to get into that top three, unfortunately. So 48.1% chance to get into the top four. And then the lowest pick that you could get is the eighth overall selection. So that's your range, 1 to 8, if you end up with the fourth worst record in the NBA.
Thanks so much for the call, Jimmy. We appreciate it. I was going to say, well, what happened to them, the USM, when they played the Colonels? But he dropped out. But we'll talk about that another time. We'll be back with more sports talk here on the Big 870. And Saints defensive back Ugo Amade will join us right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottiglia along with Charlie Long. And on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, he's not a new member of the Saints because he's entering the third year. Ugo Amade, Saints defensive back. Ugo, thanks so much for joining us and congratulations on a new deal with the Saints.
Thank y'all so much, man. Thank y'all for having me on your show, too.
Ugo, I don't think I've ever asked you this. I know we've talked before, but what's your... If you had to say my best position out on the football field, what would it be?
I mean, it's tough, man. I play all of them, man. So, and they all go backwards. So, I mean, it's hard to just pinpoint one because I like them all.
I know to play in this league for any length of time, you got it. One, you got to be versatile. You got to be able to play. And you were involved in a lot of the nickel and dime schemes. And for the people out there listening, you know, just the regular two corners, two safeties, man, that's rarely seen today. I've seen a lot of teams, they in nickel to start the game. And so how that has really changed pro football in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's changed a lot because, you know, back in the day, there was no nickel. They used to call it like a star position, but it was never heightened. But now the league is changing to such so much of a passing league where the nickel is just as valuable as having another linebacker on the field, you know. So I have seen a lot of teams just playing nickel throughout that whole game. And if your nickel can cover, tackle, get off blocks, and blitz just like a linebacker, he's fit for your defense.
One of the things in watching you, and you brought it up just now, the ability to tackle. And it's funny, Vic Fangio, we had him on when he wasn't employed, right after he had got fired as being the head coach of the Broncos. Now he's defensive coordinator with the Eagles. And he says, one of the things that I watch today is, can guys tackle, secondary people tackle? And that's a strength. You're not the biggest guy in the world, but you are a really good open field tackler.
Yeah, man, I really take pride in that. Really, from my college coach at Oregon, Coach Neal, he really, like, harped on us to, like, making sure you get the guy down, because getting the guy down and getting off the blocks were the two keys for him. And he always would tell us, he said, one of the hardest things to do in football, especially in NFL, is tackling. And that's one of the most things you don't practice, because you want to save your body till the game day. So you have to continue to put your mind in those game reps. So just practice on wrapping somebody up, because you won't be able to practice it at full speed in practice. So you just got to get your mind ready to go.
Ugo, before I start asking you about some of the new Saints defensive coaches, I wanted to get your thoughts on Phil Galliano. I mean, when you first got here in 2023, you played a lot on special teams. Galliano was an assistant special teams coach. Now with Coach Rizzi moving on, he was promoted to special teams coordinator. Your thoughts on Phil and what he can bring the special teams unit?
I think it's big for them to bring him back because, one, he already knows the players. You know, the depth chart didn't change too much. And having him there, he knows everybody's strengths. And I knew just when he was the assistant that he had his own little, you know, own little ways of getting the thing, getting job done, you know, of how he would do it if he was to be able to take over, you know. But I feel like I have a lot of confidence in him, one, because he knows us, and two, that it's going to be a lot of similar carryover I would expect, you know, but I didn't ask him, but I would expect it to be a lot of similar carryover that we'll all be able to adjust to quickly.
Ugo, I have to laugh when you said that. When Coach Rizzi took over as the head coach, he was doing the Monday night coaches show. And we asked him about Phil Galliano. He said, I give him all the work I don't want to do. He said he's in charge now. He's the special teams guy. He's got to handle all that work I don't want to do anymore.
Yeah, so now he's going to give it to his assistant. It'll be a domino effect now.
Have you had a chance to talk to Brandon Staley and kind of his outlook on exactly how he's going to use you in defensively? Because he plays a lot of different schemes. And, again, it's a chess match between the offense and the defense. But how much time have you got to talk to Coach Staley?
I haven't talked to Coach Staley yet, but I've always watched his game from afar. You know, they always played on Monday night games, especially when he was with the Chargers, like the, I think, 2022 season, when he was with Darrell Herbert. I just always watched their defense. I was like, oh, they're a different defense that we had from the year before, but I feel like we have the players to get his job done.
It was kind of interesting seeing what the Saints did this offseason with the coaching staff, especially on the defensive side. They dipped into the college ranks a lot. And I just want to get your thoughts on, you know, Terry Joseph, the defensive pass game coordinator, Bo Davis, like all these names that are coming from the college ranks up to the NFL. Some of them already have the NFL experience, but, you know, I guess we'll start with Coach Joseph, who, you know, spent a couple of years at Texas. Mike's very familiar with him. Have you spoken with him yet?
Yeah, he's a Louisiana guy, yeah. So I know you'll do you good, Hugo.
Okay, good, good. But now I haven't talked to any of the new coaches yet, but I feel like with bringing the college coaches into the NFL, I think that's a new burst of energy, you know, just excitement of having to coach guys now that are responsible, that, you know, you can count on, you know, these are guys that take pride in what they do, especially with our squad. So I feel like it's a good sign of bringing these college coaches into the professionals.
Your thoughts on Alante Taylor? He's a really talented young man playing the corner position. He's played both outside and also in the nickel. Your thoughts on Alante, because I look at him, that guy's got a lot of talent. It's just finding, I think, the right niche for him on the defensive side.
Alante is a very talented guy. He's tough as nails. That's all I was to describe him. He's tough as nails. He'll hit anybody, he'll cover anybody, you know, and he's not that big of a bill as far as, like, muscle-wise, you know, but he can run anybody, he can cover anybody, he'll come up and hit. He's very talented. There's not one thing he can't do because he has so much speed, you know, and speed kills in today's game, you know. So, I mean, just I think going in this year, is whatever they have him set at, he'll just be good at, because I feel like last year, you know, they just had him bouncing around, you know, especially at our level, you got to have somewhere where you can stick, you know, because not every player can just bounce around throughout the season, you know, from one position to another and be at the top of their game, you know. So I feel like this year they're going to have it set for what he's going to do, and he's going to be lights out with it.
Hugo, a lot of the times when we're talking to the players, it's a lot of new faces that they're bringing in, and so we're having to ask, you know, have you spoken to this guy? Have you spoken to this guy? But with you, obviously, you know all these guys already. I just want to get your thoughts on Tyrann Mathieu as well. The Saints defense has a bunch of veteran leaders on it up front with Cam Jordan and the linebacker room with DeMario Davis, and then obviously the secondary with Tyrann. So your relationship with Tyrann and the leadership he brings to that DB room?
I have a really good relationship with Tyrann. First, it's my favorite player growing up as a kid. I mean, I dyed my mohawk in high school, the blonde. Literally, I tried to be like the Honey Badger. I was committed to LSU. I wanted to do the whole Honey Badger journey, you know. But he's a good dude, man. For a vet like him, especially as a DB, he's like one of my best DBs, like vet that I've had throughout my whole professional career, you know. And like whatever you need as far as on the field, off the field, he's so wise to guide you through that because he's been through so much, you know, and guys before him been through so much they poured it on him. So now he's just paying it forward, you know. And I feel like him on our squad, and he's another big reason why I wanted to come back, because he's such a, like, when he's not on the field, he doesn't even have to do anything, but his presence on the field makes everybody else want to just play better, you know. So when he's on the field, like, you feel like, oh, something's just missing, you know. But just him being with us, you know, staying there for another year, just it's good for the team.
Hugo, you brought it up, and I'll let you tell the story, because I know you were verbally committed to LSU and coaching change. And people say, man, how the hell a guy from Tennessee ends up at Oregon? But you got a real good story behind that, so I'll let you tell it.
Oh, yeah. So I was committed to Ole Miss my junior year. And going into my senior year, Ole Miss wanted me to come in June, because I already planned my senior year to graduate early to be done in January. So once January was coming, they're like, oh, no, we don't want you to come in early. We want you to come in June. I was like, man, I can't do that. I don't want to sit at home from January all the way to June and just be doing nothing. So that's when John Chavis and I forgot the D coordinator's name. They call him Chief.
Yeah, John Chavis. And John Corey, Chavis, John Corey, Chavis. Yeah, Corey Raymond and John Chavis.
Yes, exactly. So John Chavis And Les Miles came to my high school when I decommitted from Ole Miss. And I'll never forget it. Literally, they came in the hallway, and all the kids were just going crazy. Like, because this is when LSU was really good at this time. They were really good. It's 2014 going to 2015. They were really good. They were a good ball club at this time. And my head coach calls me into the press conference, into the conference room. And I didn't know who was at the school. I didn't know who was there. And I came in the room, and it was just them two sitting there. And, you know, John Chavis and Les Miles. Literally, Les Miles was talking. He's like, yeah, man, we really want you. We like you a lot. You remind me a lot like Tyrann Mathieu. You know, we can use you as returner, play DB. And I was like, oh, man, I'm stoked. So we had that conference, and then later on that night, they came to my house, and they're like, yeah, they told my parents, like, we want to offer your son a full scholarship to LSU. So fast forward, I had LSU and Tennessee on the table, and I ended up coming to LSU over Tennessee. And Tennessee made a big push to come get me. They flew on their private jet once they found out LSU came to my house. And Butch Jones and then their recruiter coach that was in my area at that time, I can't remember his name, came to my house. And they were trying to give me a little last-minute spiel before I committed. Like, hey, make sure, you know, you want to be with Tennessee brick by brick. That was their slogan back then. And I ended up committing to LSU over Tennessee. And then literally after I committed to LSU, like probably hours later, they had their bowl game here in Tennessee, which is funny, against Notre Dame in the Music City Bowl. And John Chavis ended up leaving to go to Texas A&M. So now it's like, everybody's on social media. At this time, Twitter wasn't where it's at today. So it wasn't like everybody was on it, but enough people were on it to get to me. They were like, oh, Ugo, how you commit to a school where the coaches leave and they tell you, blah, blah, blah. And I called John Chavis. His phone goes straight to voicemail. Like, when it happened, I was like, go straight to voicemail. Literally 48 hours later, he pops up out of nowhere on Twitter, DMs me, like, hey, Ugo, what's your number? I'm going to call you. He calls me like, hey, you want to offer your full scholarship at Texas A&M? I'm like, man. I'm like, what? I just committed to you at LSU. Now you're gone. I called Coach Raymond. I was like, hey, do you still want me to come to LSU? I'm like, what do y'all want to do? He said, Coach Raymond said, I'll be honest with you, Ugo. He said, I don't know if I'm going to have a job here in a few weeks, you know, because, you know, back then when the head coach got fired, they cleaned house. The new head coach brings in his whole staff, you know. So I was like, okay. And I went back to the drawing board. I was like, all right, I'm leaning not to go to LSU no more. I called Tennessee back. Tennessee said, oh, we already moved on from your class. But Butch Jones said, I'll call somebody else to see if they want you in their class. He reached out to North Carolina. North Carolina said the same thing. So we already moved on from your class. So now I'm at home in January, not even at school, just working out, going home. And then my trainer reaches out to Jim Harbaugh's assistant at the time in Michigan. He said, hey, I got this 4-star DB into your program. Are you willing to give him an offer or a visit? He gets a text back and says, it says, hey, this is not so-and-so, but I need DB's bat in this class. Can you give me his transcript and all that information? And that message went to Oregon and not to Michigan. So that's the crazy part, right? So Coach Neal, the DB coach, he calls me. You know, he's talking to me like, yeah. Mark Helfrich was the head coach at Oregon at the time. He said, yeah, we need just good kids with good grades and all that stuff. Because at the time, Oregon couldn't even have camps because they were suspended from whatever Chip Kelly had done. So they couldn't have camps. Like, oh, we're trying to change the image. Like, we're bringing kids with good grades and all that. I'm like, well, I have a 3.6 GPA, so there would be no issues with that. And then they ended up sending me a video on Twitter like 2014, like at the Autzen Stadium, or what it looked like on like a video. If I just turn the video of the stadium, I could just turn my phone and like I could see the whole stadium. It was crazy. So after the Music City Bowl, but after the Rose Bowl game against Florida State, where they beat them bad, they gave me a scholarship at that time. And once they gave me the scholarship, I signed without even visiting or anything. Signed there.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It's super crazy. So when I signed there, honestly, I didn't even know where Oregon was on the map. I was like, let's go. We're going to Oregon. I seen the uniforms. I seen that they're winning. I seen enough. Let's go. I told my family, let's go. We get on the airplane. I literally, like that movie, Are We There Yet? I kept asking my mom and dad, like, man, are we there yet? They're like, we took two planes. I'm like, it's super far. And I get there, and Coach Neal, my DB coach, he welcomes me and my parents in. You know, he gets me moved into my apartment and all that stuff. And the rest is history.
Ugo, I got to visit Oregon a few years back in the campus and the facilities. Mm-hmm. I told this to Charlie. It's the Taj Mahal. Now, again,
pictures, Ugo. It looks nice.
Phil Knight got a few nickels in his pocket. Okay. He can afford to pay for it. But, man, they got some unbelievable facilities at University of Oregon.
It's crazy because, like, even when I come back to Tennessee, I wear all my Oregon stuff because, like, being from the South, you don't see stuff like that, like out there in Oregon. Like I show all my friends all the new stuff I get, like all the time, and like they put every when somebody invests in something, Phil Knight is the symbol of how you invest into something, because it's just everything just looks completely nice. Barbershop in your locker room, you can put a pin code and open up your lockers and all that stuff. I mean, it's ridiculous.
One of the things too is, man, I can remember growing up and ran a little track, and Steve Prefontaine, you know, and he was sort of synonymous with Oregon because of the fact of, you know, his running skills. He was a long distance runner, and that's kind of how Phil Knight got broke into the business with the shoe industry, trying to get that shoe right for Pre. And now he's, man, Oregon's a juggernaut. I will say that football-wise, man, they got some talent going there, and they've been able to get a lot of young men from either the California high school ranks or from the South to go there.
Yeah, that is true. And you know, when I was getting recruited, like the coaches didn't even want to recruit the South because they felt like they would waste their time getting there, because they don't think a kid would want to come all the way from Florida or Alabama all the way to Oregon because it's so far. But now they're getting all the kids, and NILs open up the door to get anybody from anywhere. You get a kid from freaking Canada if you could, like, you know. So I just open the door for everything.
Ugo, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Again, man, congratulations on a new deal with the Saints, and we'll see you in some of the mini camps.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate y'all having me again. Thank y'all.
Thanks
so much. Ugo Amadi. And, man, what a great story.
Yeah.
Recruiting story. People think, you know, man, I've heard some crazy stories. No, that one's a wild one. I mean, you talk about a swing from Ole Miss to LSU. Then Chief tries to get him to go to A&M. They misplaced the number, and they thought they were trying to get him a scholarship at Michigan. They got him a scholarship at Oregon.
He was all the way out to Eugene. Man. Yeah. Listen, Mike, I mean, we talked a little bit about it, too, with Ugo specifically, the effort that he shows from play to play every single time he's on the field. That's how you go from being a fourth-round pick to being entering year 7 in the NFL.
He's a tough dude out on the field.
He's
a tough dude out on that football field. When we come back, Scott Spinelli, one of our best guests that we have here on Sports Talk, to talk about the Sweet 16 tournament right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike DeTay along with Charlie Long, and on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text line, one of our top guests here, man, covers college basketball like nobody can. Scott Spinelli. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys. Always a pleasure.
Coach, yesterday we had on the head basketball coach from Nicholls State, Coach Boog, Tevon Sadler, and always tease him about this. He's from Maryland, so I said, you know, he's just a college boy from Maryland. He don't know nothing about the real world, even though he played at Nicholls State, but he grew up in that area. He thinks that Maryland has got a legitimate shot to beat Florida, and he said, I think they can win it all. Now, I don't know if I'd go that far, but your thoughts on Maryland, Florida, the matchup tonight. I know Coach Boog, man, I think maybe he's talking more from the heart than the head here, but your thoughts on Maryland, Florida tonight?
Well, first and foremost, I think, you know, like that game right there is obviously going to be a high-level matchup. I mean, when you talk about, you know, the both teams, they both have so many different weapons. Obviously, you know, Derek Queen is gets in terms of being a skilled guy that can go in and away from the basket, plays with a lot of energy. And they did really well in the transfer portal, picking up some guys that, you know, assume their roles. I mean, they can impact winning in so many ways. But to me, I don't know. I think that their depth, I think, is going to be an issue here tonight. I just think Florida is so much deeper than Maryland. And I do think Florida, you know, just because their size, they're going to be able to match up. And those guys that they have, you know, those bigs Florida has, I mean, they can get away from the basket too and defend, you know, a guy like, you know, Derek Queen. So I think, you know, you're going to see a matchup that I think will be very interesting. But I think as the game goes, I think Florida with their depth, you know, will wear Maryland down.
Arkansas, Texas Tech, this is kind of the dichotomy matchup here. Arkansas, fast-paced. They like to push it up the floor, take the three-point shot. Texas Tech, man, a really good defensive team. Your thoughts on that matchup? Because it really kind of strength against strength here.
thing about, you know, Arkansas, I mean, you know, listen, Arkansas, Coach Calipari's got, they're one of the more talented teams in the tournament. And he's got them playing their best basketball here late in the year. Obviously, John L. Davis has done it before at Florida Atlantic, and he's, you know, twice. I mean, so, you know, that was a very big pickup for Arkansas in the portal. But I do think in this game, I think Texas Tech, I mean, look, they're the type of team that, again, they can play both ways. They could beat you fast. They could beat you playing in the half court. You know, Toppin is as good as it gets. Good game, though. I think two kind of, you know, evenly matched teams in terms of talent. But I do think Texas Tech, just because of the fact that they have such a tenacious defense, at the end of it, will win out in that game. But I think that will be a really good game, too.
Coach, it kind of felt like a win-win-win situation when you see, you know, Coach Cal moving to Arkansas. He's got them in the Sweet 16 in his first year. Coach Pope leaves BYU and then takes over Kentucky. He's got them in the Sweet 16 their first year. And then Coach Young takes over BYU, and he's got them in the Sweet 16 as well. The matchup tonight between BYU and Alabama, I'm really looking forward to. I mean, the books are all over this about it being a very high-scoring affair between two elite offensive teams. We saw BYU kind of squeak out that victory against Wisconsin in another very high-scoring affair, and now they get to play another very good offensive team in Alabama. What do you expect from this matchup tonight?
Coach, they can't put the total high enough.
No, they really can't.
Listen, I think you have, again, what's happening this year, I'll get back to the matchup, as you guys, when we came in last time, we talked about 25 teams or so that could upset a one, just because, you know, there's a legit 25 teams that have so much money in the NFL. This, you know, a lot of these teams, you know, can compete with these other teams. And the NCAA tournament has kind of been a little bit uneventful, and I think it's going to become more uneventful over the next several years, just because these mid-major guys that are leaving these mid-major programs, they're taking the NIL money, and some of them are just sitting on the bench at the high levels. But getting back to this game, I agree with you. This is two teams that, you know, have a high-level, high-octane offense. Look, BYU has one, you know, guy on the team, 26 years old. I mean, like, they've got some experienced older guys that, again, you know, playing against BYU in the tournament over the years, we were at Texas A&M. You know, they're older, they're more experienced. And again, as you guys know, there's a big difference between a 25, 26-year-old than an 18, 19-year-old. And I think, again, not that Alabama's young, but again, that is a big advantage for BYU. But in the end, I got to tell you, I think Alabama's offense, you know, the way they play so free. They're in a flow type offense. I just think in the end, I think Alabama in this game, you know, is going to beat BYU. I think, again, it's going to be an up and down game, but, you know, something is going to give out. And I think, you know, the Alabama, if they can just, you know, contest the 3-point line, you know, top foot, high hand, and make it hard for BYU, and then they finish possessions with rebounds, I think Alabama in this game will come out on top.
Coach, the South region, this is moving to tomorrow now, Ole Miss, Michigan State, Michigan, Auburn. And that just, both of those matchups could create such a fun Elite Eight where you have potentially Ole Miss versus Auburn or Michigan versus Michigan State, that hated rivalry. Ultimately, we might get Auburn versus Michigan State as well. But your thoughts on those four teams? I think any way you kind of mix and match it, it's going to be a really fun Elite Eight.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. But when you think about this now, I mean, Ole Miss right now is nobody's talking about Ole Miss. And when you really look at what they've done in the first weekend, they were dominant. I mean, they were dominant, surprisingly so. I didn't think, you know, this is one of those teams that, you know, you say coming into the tournament, you know, who's going to get hot in the tournament? I think Ole Miss is the hot team right now. As good as Michigan State is, and you never can go against, you know, obviously a Coach Izzo team in the NCAA tournament, this is going to be a very interesting game here. I think Ole Miss right now is playing very, very good basketball. They defend. You know, they've got a team that, you know, is scoring from all different, you know, different positions. You know, this is going to be an interesting game. But I tell you what, you know, I hate to say it, but I think Ole Miss right now is playing better than any other team right now, at least based on that first week. And they are a very dangerous team. You know, and then you look at Auburn, Michigan. Look, Auburn is, you know, again, there's another team that can beat you fast. They can beat you in the half court. Michigan will propose a problem for them just because, again, they've got some big guys that can step away from the basket. Wolf and those guys can make threes. They can handle the ball. You know, so I do think that's going to be an interesting matchup. I think think that game would be a lot closer, and it might be a grind-out game. That could be a game that if Michigan puts them in the half court, I think it's in their best interest. I don't think they can get out and run with Auburn, in my opinion, unless they can get easy baskets. But I don't think they want to, you know, crash the glass. I think they want to get back and set their defense and make Auburn beat them in the half court. Not that they can't, but I think that's what Michigan's strategy is. But I think Auburn, in the end, will have too much. And I think Auburn-Ole Miss. Any matchup there, as much as I thought these SEC teams would beat each other up, and they did. We lost a lot of them in the first weekend. You know, these other teams are that good, and they're that complete, and they are older and experienced.
Coach, before we let you run, I wanted to ask you, we had a listener call in. It's been a really miserable season for the Pelicans, and so a lot of folks are looking for the NBA draft and the lottery specifically. The Pelicans right now with the fourth worst record in the NBA, they're going to be picking between 1 and 8 if it ends up that way. I just wanted to ask you if there's any kind of prospects that you're really looking for Pelicans fans to watch in the Sweet 16 over this weekend.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, look, the NBA right now, you know, if you really look at the, you know, the formula of, you know, a team like Oklahoma City and how they built their team, and it took years, right? It just, they were in that rebuild mode. But they did a really good job at evaluating guys and getting value on players that weren't necessarily the top guys that were going to be lottery picks and first round guys. There is so many good players out here right now. And I think the old, you know, the old philosophy of, hey, we got to take younger guys. Well, you can take younger guys and develop them. By the time they develop, you know, you're going to have to pay them a max contract if they do. I think in New Orleans' case, I think they've got a tremendous front office. Listen, Bryson Graham is a kid that I recruited. He played for us at Texas A&M. He's there on there in their front office, and I think he's got a keen eye for talent. So I think Pelican fans can really count on him. What I believe to be key for the Pelicans, not just in the, you know, this first round, they got to find those diamonds in the rough. And when you look around, I've seen a lot of players this year that I think are guys that have a lot of value that might not necessarily be talked about in the first round, you know, in the draft, but really good players. And I think that's what the Pelicans are going to have to do to really get their team to where they want it to be, championship caliber.
Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Man, always great insights. We love to have you on. And I think it'll be an exciting weekend, college basketball here. Love the matchups.
No question about it. No question about it. Guys, it's always a pleasure. I love being on the show with you guys.
Thanks so much. Coach Scott Spinelli does a great job covering college basketball and certainly the Sweet 16. Everybody got a lot of opinions, but he's one of the first ones today that picked Alabama. Most people are picking the upset here with BYU.
BYU is the hot pick. Alabama is still favored 4.5 points here, Mike. You know, it's going to be back and forth. Alabama scares me a little bit because if they go cold from three, they can lose to anybody. But we'll see what happens tonight. BYU's not exactly great at guarding the three-point line.
And he's on Texas Tech like a lot of people are.
Yep.
A lot of people think Texas Tech, tough matchup for the Razorbacks. We'll be back to finish it off here in hour number two right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Finishing up here in hour number two of Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dottie along with Charlie Long. I want to tell everybody at 6:30 tonight right here on the Big 870 WWL, LSU baseball as they play the Mississippi State Bulldogs, and first pitch will be at 7 o'clock tonight. We'll be back with a little bit more Sports Talk right after this news break on the Big 870 WWL.
Welcome on into the second half of Sports Talk. We got an abbreviated edition this March 27th on a Thursday, getting ready for some coverage of LSU baseball taking on Mississippi State. Game one, pregame coverage 6:30, a first pitch 7 o'clock in Alec Box Stadium. Looking forward to that matchup. We also got opening day of Major League Baseball and, oh yeah, Sweet 16 NCAA men's tournament action tonight. Who says there's nothing going on after football season? It's just those dull days of the, you know, summer months that end up hurting us. But right now, there's a ton going on.
Busy, busy, busy. And we are both fans of 1-0 teams. Steve, woo-hoo! How about that? The Yankees take down the Brewers 4-2 earlier today, although it got a little bit interesting with Devin Williams there late. Same thing with the Astros, by the way. They took down the Mets 3-1 at now Daikin Park. It's no longer Minute Maid. I'm going to have to get used to that. But the Astros win. Josh Hader made it a little bit interesting, but Framber Valdez was awesome, and exactly what you want to see from, you know, your opening day ace.
And what do you know? opening day stays the same for the Pittsburgh Pirates. They ruined another start for Paul Skeens. That game is tied up 4-4 in the bottom of the inning, ninth inning now. Skeens started off the this year 5 1/3 innings, struck out 7, gave up 2 earned runs. But will not be on the hook for a victory if the Pirates can pull this one out.
Yeah, with Skeens, he got off to a really good start, but then he ran into some issues in the sixth inning. He got pulled at that point. Now, they didn't end up taking advantage of it because it's the Marlins. So the Marlins actually put a couple runs on Holderman late, just basically in the eighth inning now, Steve. So now we're in the ninth, and it's looking actually like the Marlins are going to walk this thing off.
I'll mention some Sweet 16 action. We have LSU baseball on WWL. Meanwhile, if you tune over to the Bet 92.9 FM and 1350 AM right now, you can catch pregame coverage of all the action going on there. Westwood One's coverage. And we've got actually BYU and Alabama have tipped off. BYU leading 9-6 right now, 17 minutes left in the first quarter there, first period there for the. That game, 6:39 tip-off, will be Florida versus Maryland. I know a lot of eyes and ears will be on that matchup, especially after what we heard from Nicholls State head coach yesterday saying that Maryland, the Terps, could upset the Florida Gators today.
I'm telling you, man, if it happens, I'm ripping up my bracket. It's going to be over. And, like, that is my champion. I have Florida winning the whole thing, so if they lose in the Sweet 16, it's going to be over. Now, Duke on the opposite side I have in the championship game, so yeah. It's not going to be entirely messed up, but please, Florida, don't let it happen. Now, what we were talking about earlier, Steve, as well, when we mentioned with a WWL listener about prospects to watch for the Pelicans, Derek Queen for Maryland, who hit that big game-winning shot against Colorado State in the round of 32. It's the only buzzer beater so far in the NCAA tournament. He is probably going to end up being a top 5-7 pick. And with the Pelicans where they are right now in the draft, you know, if they don't land in the top 4, which they might fall out,
right?
The lowest they can go is pick 8 at this point. And if they move up into the third worst record in the NBA, then it goes down to 7. And it's kind of like a ladder system with the lottery in the NBA. So that's one player to watch, Con Knipple from Duke as well. Obviously, if you have the pipe dream of the Pelicans getting the number 1 overall pick, it's not really that much of a pipe dream because you got the
lottery, baby. Yeah, how those ping pong balls
fall. What happens, but... So obviously keep an eye on him too.
Hopefully, I think what David Griffin has a lucky tie. He'll need to be sporting that on the lotto night.
Yes, please.
Looking at the LSU game about to come up right here on WWL, a 6:30 first pitch this evening. Man, that Thursday, 7 o'clock first pitch. Sorry, 6:30 pregame coverage. Thursday night start. Things changing up a little bit instead of the Friday, Saturday, Sunday action. Maybe that works for LSU and Mississippi State's favor this weekend because I know there's some question marks as what the weather is going to be like tomorrow evening and even into Saturday. Something could end up getting pushed to Sunday action depending on what the weather does.
So you're saying that helps Mississippi State?
I think it helps, with both teams, so you don't have to worry about making this game up possibly at a later time, that with the Thursday, Friday, Saturday series, it leaves Sunday open for this to get done this week and not carry over.
I gotcha. Yeah, no, I think it will be fine. If anything, they might potentially move tomorrow's game up.
I was thinking that too, yeah.
We'll have to see. I mean, we'll provide any updates when we get them, but we haven't gotten any yet. Tonight's a huge game, Steve. Like, we can't overemphasize it enough. Like, Cade Anderson... And this LSU team has to pick up a win in game 1 because if they don't, all of a sudden you're looking at Pico Cohn, who's one of the best pitchers in the SEC in game 2. They've kept him for the second matchup of the weekend, keeping him on Fridays. They're kind of pitching off, so to speak, a little bit. So LSU has to pick up a win tonight, bounce back from that weekend series loss to Texas, and get off to a 1-0 start against Mississippi State.
We have it a little bit easy because, like you mentioned at the start of the show, that both of our MLB teams have played already. But with things going on tonight with the Sweet 16 action in the men's tournament, opening day of Major League Baseball, and LSU baseball starting another SEC series on a Thursday, what would you be locked into? Is it kind of one on TV and another one on the laptop and the other on the phone?
Basically. I mean, I'm obviously be following the LSU baseball game tonight, but I'm keeping my eye on the Sweet 16 as well. And like you said, we got it easy. I'm not watching this stupid, Dodgers-Tigers opening game on ESPN. I've already had, looked at this disgusting ring ceremony. I hate the Dodgers. So, yeah, I'm not going to be watching that. I already watched my Astros win a 3-1 opening day game against the Mets. So I'm going to be locked into, obviously, LSU versus Mississippi State and the Sweet 16 tonight.
Speaking of LSU versus Mississippi State, the stud, the monster, Monster Milam, spoke with the media earlier and had a preview of Mississippi State, talked about a bunch of things. We'll hear from him as the Tigers, like I said, getting ready for that 7 o'clock first pitch right here on WWL. Here's Monster Milam.
Talk about this series with Mississippi State. What do you expect?
Expect to win. I mean, we're at home, you know, right there with Texas last weekend. You know, didn't go our way, but, you know, we're home now, and I expect to win, you know. At least 2 out of 3, you want to get the sweep, but that's what we're here for.
Offensively, just when you look at the first 26, 27 games, you guys have been largely very consistent, you know, maintaining your approach. Just what goes into that, doing that holistically, 1 through 9, everybody kind of being able to do their part and consistently put pressure on defenses and pitching staffs.
Yeah, I would say everybody's got a different approach in what they're trying to do, and we do a good job of executing that most of the time. And, you know, it's baseball, stuff happens, and, you know, sometimes you line out and you don't get a runner in, or, you know, just stuff happens. And, you know, we're always just trying to get to the next guy and trying to put pressure on them, because, you know, when we're on defense, you know, you don't like having so much pressure on you to get out of it. But just staying basic and staying locked into our plan, and that's what we've been able to do to teams.
What are you looking to improve for this weekend, especially playing Thursday, Friday, Saturday games?
Looking to just have a little more better at-bats for myself. I felt like I got out of my plan a little bit this last weekend. Just having better at-bats, seeing the ball, getting back to, you know, what I do, and, you know, trying to help my team win as best as I can, and, you know, go out there and just have fun.
Monster Milam and the Tigers coming up with a 7 o'clock first pitch right here on WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app, a 6:30 pregame coverage. We shall take a break and get you ready for LSU action taking on those Bulldogs right after this. Stay tuned on WWL. First half action in Sweet 16, Alabama up 27-25, currently over BYU. You can catch that action on the Bet 92.9 FM, 1350 AM. Meanwhile, coming up right here on the Big 870 AM and 105.3 FM, LSU baseball's opening game of their series against Mississippi State. Have a great night, everybody. Be talking to you tomorrow. Also joining us on the show on Friday, safety Saints Justin Reed. So stay tuned for that.